Sit back, relax, and raise a glass, for spirits coming from the past. Sip on salt while your skin crawls with your pre-haunting wolf having a ball. Troop was home in Washington pool, with guests and spirits in your favorite pools. Gather the others, no hesitating. The moment's approaching, it's now time to sing. Hogs and hogs, hogs and hogs, crack open the can and fill to the top. Hogs and hogs, hogs and hogs, this is your podcast and it's called Hogs and Hogs.
So I figure if we're going to talk about premonitions and psychic abilities, who better than to bring on Maria, who has been there for many investigations with me. It has been a crazy few years because I spent most of my life thinking all psychics were fake. I still believe that most are fake. But Maria has proven to me time and time again that there are real psychics in the world. So Maria, tell us about you.
I'm a mom. I did 26 years working in law enforcement. And let's see, right now I'm working at a fabric store because that's my retirement job. I have two kids and a bunch of cats. And basically I'm pretty normal, you know, except for ever since I was a little kid, I could see dead people, just like the movie. I would have these playmates that I would sit with. And there was one in particular. She was a Hispanic Indian looking lady who only spoke in Spanish. And thankfully I spoke Spanish. She would, you know, she would talk to me and tell me all sorts of stories about my dad. And so I would bring this up with my dad, and my dad goes, how do you know that? How do you know this? You know, like about the time that it took him to be 3 years old to be potty trained and things like that. And how heavy he was as a baby. I mean, he was like the refrigerator Perry big, you know. And my dad would just go, how do you know this stuff? You know, and I said, Nana told me. And he goes, who's Nana, you know? And I go, I don't know her name. She just tells me to call her Nana. Well, they finally figured it out. Him and my mom figured it out that it was my great-grandmother on my dad's side. And she was born, she died 70 years before I was born. And
wow.
Yeah, yeah. But we would sit and talk and she would tell me all sorts of stories, you know? And I would be like, oh, neat, you know?
Wow. So this wasn't just a brief visit from an apparition. I mean, she would really spend time with you when just at any point in the day, she would just appear and you would be there. Or could it be a situation where you would ask for her and she would appear? How did it usually work?
It was usually at night after my bedtime. And I've always been kind of a night owl. So I would wake up in the middle of the night and she would be there. And so, you know, I would talk to her. And she would talk to me. One of the things I remember when I was 2 or 3 years old, I would go out to the back porch and I would like sit on the back porch and I would see people in the sky. And they would be like laying out in the sky. You could see the stars through them. And they would be telling me things, but I wouldn't hear them physically, but I would hear them in my head. And that was so long ago, I don't remember what they used to tell me. But now I'm wondering if they were angels or aliens. Who knows, you know?
I got to ask, over the years, obviously, you and I have investigated together quite a bit. And it's not that common for people to use their sixth sense, you know what I mean? As their primary tool in investigating, but you have that very forefront and you use it very often in our investigations. What are some of the times that you feel your psychic abilities were way more pertinent than whatever technology we might have been using in a case at that time?
Well, remember Hartley's Botanical? Oh, I don't know if you were at that investigation. Hartley's Botanical is down in Somas. This guy was telling us, Mr. Hartley was telling us how some of his workers were afraid to be anywhere near the river bottom, especially after it got dark, because they would see things. And then Mr. Hartley, he said, well, you know, let's go to the river bottom. And I said, I don't want to know anything that happened there. I just, you know, I just let me feel it, because I like going in cold. Because, you know, it's so easy if people tell you what's going on, it's so easy to interpret that and put, you know, I don't know. It's just, I like going in cold because I don't want to know anything. And so we're walking along the river bottom and we're just all chatting. That was with Gene. You remember Gene, right? And we're just chatting and Gene goes, I know the whole story, but we're not going to tell her. And we're walking along and then I stopped and they said, what's up here? You know, and I said, there is a lady dressed in blue and she is bleeding from her wrist and she's crawling on the ground. And Gene goes, oh my God. And Mr. Hartley goes, that's where they found her. I guess there was a murder back in the 40s where it was a murder suicide type of deal. This woman got pregnant by a guy who was a parents were rich ranchers out there. And, you know, she told him that, you know, we're going to have a baby. And so he dropped her like a hot potato saying, I'm not going to marry you. You know, you come from the wrong side of the tracks, basically. You know, so she goes to the river bottom and she tells her boyfriend where she's going to be. Anyway, he follows her out there. And by then she had already slit her wrists and she goes, I don't want to die. I don't want to die. And he goes, well, you're going to, you know, basically, you know, he just left her there, you know, her crawling after him, basically. Everybody was kind of freaked out, especially, remember Jason Ashley? Yeah, he was really freaked out, you know, and I think that night I felt like I was so on that it was weird. It was almost electrical.
Well, I remember one of the first times that you legitimately convinced me. And you've been showing me quite a few things over time, but we were doing an investigation at a church. It was St. Paul's Church in
Santa Paula.
Thank you. In Santa Paula. We were at St. Paul's Church in Santa Paula. Duh. And while we were there, I remember I was in one of the rooms and I was telling Sarah, I was like, man, I just keep seeing a little girl and I keep thinking about the name Elizabeth, which is my sister's name. I was like, why am I thinking about my sister during an investigation? This doesn't feel right. This is weird. I don't understand. And I couldn't get her out of my head. And then you walk into the room and I was like, Maria, do you feel anything? And you're like, oh yeah, there's a little girl in the corner and her name is Elizabeth. And I was like, what is this? And I lost my mind. Because it was one of the first times that somebody was able to like really show me that psychic abilities can be real. And I lost it. I could not believe that you were having the same thoughts that I was. And it was down to the T. I described the little girl to Sarah and then you described it to both of us while we were there. And Sarah's looking at me and she's looking at you. And like, it was just this whole thing where it was like, oh my gosh, like, this is real. This is actually happening. This is fantastic. And that was, you know, one of my first experiences. And over time, you've shown me time and time again. Unfortunately, we had a caller that wasn't able to make the call today after all, but, you know, they contacted us to ask us some questions. And do you want to talk about the doppelganger situation that happened in my home 6-7 years ago?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I kind of remember that, but I remembered that it was causing a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm. You know, listeners, Quasto. So what was happening was I was at my home and I was having what I thought was a ghost. We had been doing a lot of investigations. I wasn't really good about cleansing myself back then because I was like, whatever, I'm young and whatever. And I wasn't good at that. And I have since learned to fix that. But I was having what I thought was just a paranormal, you know, haunting in my home, just weird things happening all the time. But I was angry all the time when those things would happen, and I would get angrier when they would happen. And then I started realizing that all of these things that were happening when I was at my angriest points. And so I had Maria, and Maria, who was our friend that came in?
Kristen
and Maria. I had them both come into my house because I was getting overwhelmed. I had no idea how to handle this because it didn't seem to be a ghost at a certain point, which is why, you know, I called both of you in. Quasto, Kristen is a friend of ours who, like, she focuses specifically on cleansing homes. Like, that is her specialty. And so they came over, and Maria and I were talking, and I hadn't told her anything about this spirit, whatever, that I was seeing. But I started explaining, like, what I thought that they looked like. I was like, oh, you know, oh, wait, no, it wasn't even that. You started explaining what you thought they looked like, Maria. And you were just like, oh, she's this tall. Mm-hmm. She has blonde hair. It's this length. And you're going on. And as you're saying it, it starts to click. And I'm like, wait a minute. Hold on a second. And I run over and I pull out a picture and I hand it to Maria. And I was like, Maria, is this the person that you're seeing? And she's like, yeah, that's exactly who's in the house. And I was like, cool. This is a photo of me from when I was a child. And she's like, oh, you created your own doppelganger. And I was like, what does that mean? And I lost my mind because I was like, I don't understand. And Maria, please, please tell me or tell our guests what it is that I did.
Well, human beings have a lot of energy. You know, even when a human being dies, the energy that you have in you, energy doesn't die, basically. So you have all this energy. And when you're angry, that's when your energy at its peak. Being angry at yourself, being angry with a situation, being angry, you know, you start thinking about, well, when I was young, you know, I didn't have all this, you know, crap happening and stuff, you know. And so basically, you know, you create a doppelganger, you know, you go back to what when you were happier in life, and that's when you create something from yourself. And so it was a little girl, and the little girl was you. And it was probably during a time where, you know, you actually felt good about life.
Wow. So essentially it's not residual energy. It's energy you're giving off that starts to have a life of its own in a way.
Well, so this is going to happen to a lot of people during quarantine. Yeah. And that's why I wanted this guest to call earlier. And this, a lot of people are going to be going through this right now, but when you're in a room and you're just stuck in that room all the time and you have nowhere to go, the energy can't go away. It has to transfer somewhere. Like that's just a scientific fact, right? You cannot create, you cannot destroy energy. It can only be transferred from here to there. And so when you're in this room, right, say it's your bedroom, and you spend all your time in that room, and you have all this anger about all of this stuff, that energy is just stuck in this room with you. It has nowhere to go. And at some point, there's just so much energy that is just bouncing off the walls around you that it starts to form into something. And so what had happened with me was I was going through a really, really dark phase, and I was having a lot of terrible things happen in my life that I was just angry all the time. Mm-hmm. And when things finally started to get better, there was just this weird separation happening where I thought it was a haunting, but what it turns out was I had created, and not created because, again, energy can only be transferred, but I had somehow found a way to get all of my energy to form into this one terrible version of who I was, but it took form of myself as a child. You know what I mean? Because who's going to say no to a child to anything, right? Who's going to ever want to fight with that? Yeah. And so it became this big thing where I ended up having to have Kristen and Maria come to my house. We had to do multiple cleanses, and that was the only way to kind of get this thing under control, because it got to the point where I wasn't sleeping. I thought there were earthquakes happening. Like, I literally had woken up several times thinking there were earthquakes happening because, like, my bed would feel like it's shaking. And it got so overwhelming. You know, creating your own doppelganger is such a weird thing. But it was even more weird that Maria was able to explain what it looked like as a child without knowing what, we'd been friends for a long time, but I don't have pictures of myself up as a kid. I only have, like, two photos of myself as a child. So it was really wild for her to be able to describe that. And we did the cleanse and things got easier and better, but it was just, it was a really wild time to be friends with a psychic.
Let's get into, number one, your website, Never Stop Searching. But tell us a little bit about what paralosophy is all about, because I know you take more than really a scientific approach. And what I like about paralosophy is that it's simple. It says, do the work. If you want proof that there's paranormal activity, if you want proof that paranormal is real, because a lot of people, they're skeptics, and you know, there's healthy skeptics and there's those who just deny everything. But right. You like to do the work to prove, yeah, this is exactly real.
The basic tenet of paralosophy, and that the term itself is just a playful mashup of paranormal and philosophy. And I threw a hashtag in front of it just, again, to be playful, because everything now is hashtag something. Yeah. So the basic tenet of paralosophy is think more, do less. 52 weekends out of the year, you have black shirt paranormal teams running around every state, every country, running and doing and asking questions, and we got to go on an investigation, and they're doing, but we haven't really advanced. The past 10 years, the paranormal field has not evolved one bit. And maybe just going through the motions, but all that data we're collecting isn't properly being processed. So by saying, think more and do less, I stole that from carpentry. Measure twice, cut once. And we have to think about why we do the things we do. Why do we use EMF meters? Oh, because our Zach user, no, doesn't matter. Why are we using them? Are we detecting the right anomaly? You know, maybe we have to be using Geiger counters. Maybe we have to do just the magnetic field and not the electromagnetic field. I mean, there's so many things to take into account, because yeah, we have flashier equipment now with more lights and more TMs and R's on them, but we're not getting any closer to defining textbook-wise what causes a haunting, what indicates a haunting, what to do when you have measurements of such. And it's tough, because we're all crawling in the dark, you know, looking for these answers, but we're the upshot to it, we are gaining a lot of anecdotes, and anecdotal evidence is important. You can't share it. I can't give it to you. It's something that you have to take on faith. And to be honest, that's what we deal in. There's no photo. There's no video. There's no audio clip I can show you that you can say, oh, this is definite, because the very basic fault of it, you weren't there. So you have to trust me that I'm either doing it accurately or not trying to pull a fast one on you. So if it comes down to faith, anything is up for grabs, you know?
Yeah. I mean, are you in the philosophy that we just need to be trying different techniques at this point too? Is that kind of what you're saying, like, stop, think of the origin of these things, think of the reason why we're using these things. Are they even relevant anymore? Can we use new things? Is that kind of what you're thinking? Or
I think it's good. Like, you know, you go online and people, in an effort to pump themselves up, not in necessarily a bad way, but to really sound official. And again, there's a lot of people running around trying to help people. And I'm thinking, like, well, who are you helping? You don't have a handle on what you're doing. So take a step back and pick an ology, sociology, psychology, theology. Immerse yourself in it. Get to know it. Because again, the paranormal and the pursuit of these answers isn't hard, cold science. It will never be replicated in a laboratory setting, which the skeptics and everyone at the Skeptical Inquirer is, you know, gnashing their teeth like, oh, this is stupid. But it's just a fact. It's the human condition that we as a race, we as a species, we're all different. We're all unique. So how can anything be repeated? Like, okay, just to even prove that you are speaking to someone via ITC, what formula can I devise to equate that? So, all right, if I broke myself down into binary numbers, 1110, 1110, 0, how many ones and zeros would I have to change to make you?
Sure.
That's, it's an impossible thing. So trying to be the cold lab technician scientist about it, saying, all right, we're going to replicate this. Like, yes, there is importance in that. But the study of the paranormal is the study of people. It's the study of us. So we have to be personable. We have to be aware that we're not tracking weather patterns. We're not doing a geological survey. We're trying to connect with personalities. And as such, you have to remember to act a certain way. You have to act respectful. You have to act in a way where you're not barking orders or you're not demanding too much. Because, all right, imagine someone came into your house and said, hey, what's your name? How long have you lived here? You know you're dead? You get a pop in the mouth. So
we say that all the time, is that when I understand it makes for good television if you think so, but right, it's treat them like they're people because they were, and you're going into whatever area or whatever household they happen to be inhabiting, and you're a visit.
I mean, I do place some of the blame on television because, again, we know what gets ratings and we know what's entertainment, but that's the thing. The shows have no responsibility to teach or to train. It's entertainment. Right. The people who emulate it, it's their failing when all they do is copy it. And you know, you watch Paranormal Caught on Camera. Usually the first clip out of most of the shows is like an investigation, like a team investigation clip. You know, that's when you'll usually see the traditional ghost hunts. After three seasons, we're airing our third season right now. I tweeted the other day, I said, you know, we get a lot of these videos to watch. I would be interested to see the videos that we would get if our television shows were organized a different way, so that if they had to emulate something different, how would their process change? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I do when I do personal events and I run my own events. I show them that there's an alternative to the way it's done on TV. And again, don't get me wrong. I love the shows, watch the shows. There's nothing wrong with it. Just don't let that be your only education.
And, and that's always the same. It's always the same kind of show that we kind of are seeing. It seems like there are some different ones and I respect those, but like the majority of them are like that. And I think respect is just as important and just as entertaining, in my opinion.
And I like the fact that you mentioned, you know, it's the study of people, which a lot of people don't. I think a lot of people kind of get lost in that fact. Like your website's really cool to where you had the two separate experiments to kind of explain the procedure and the thought process of paralosophy. I thought that was awesome. The fact that you took that kind of time, because you say, you know, do the work. Well, here you go. Here's two experiments that kind of prove what it means to do the work before you go further. And I think, you know, it's time consuming, but I would imagine it's much more rewarding.
Well, that's again, like when I do events, I tell people straight out, okay, nothing might happen tonight, but here's what we're going to do. Don't worry about what happened on whatever ghost show last week. Don't worry about what happened when I was here. Doesn't matter. This is a unique opportunity. And this tonight, we're here. It's the only time it's going to be like this because you're here now. Don't try to emulate what you saw on TV because then you're just living someone else's experience. Live your experience. And if it doesn't line up, that's okay. You know, if you want the same experience, you go to an amusement park and go on a roller coaster. That's the same every time and it's a thrill. If you want real evidence, real experience, it's going to be yours and it's going to be unique.
And I would imagine that's kind of how you lead your events. Like, for example, September 5th, Pennhurst Asylum. One of the most infamous asylums in the United States. So you're going to be basically leading an overnight. You have obviously a great relationship with whoever is in charge of Pennhurst Asylum, and anyone can essentially join. Is that correct?
Yes. This year I'm partnering up with Pennhurst Asylum to do a hopefully series of hunts for the season, but the first one is kicking off on September 5th. You can get your tickets at PennhurstAsylum.com, and it's going to be from 7 to 3. So you're going to have quite a time. You're going to have enough time to explore the buildings and the tunnels and the different areas of Pennhurst, and you'll get time with me. And this is where I will take you beyond the shows. I'll lead you through my experience from having been at Pennhurst many times. And invariably, I always tend to learn something from the attendees also, either through a process, an experience, or just, again, our shared time there together. I feel like Bob Ross when I say that sometimes. It's like, happy, happy little ghosts. It's together, happy.
Hey, it's the kind of vibe we're going for here. So
I love it. Who doesn't want a happy ghost?
Happy ghost. Let's just put a happy ghost right here.
Yeah.
You can hear that, Annabelle, wherever you are.
Don't call her.
Yeah, if I see a doll running through the field, I'm out of there.
you mentioned you've been to Penhurst many times. Is there any incident to you that really sticks out that you might be able to enlighten us with?
I've made friendships over the year, and it's funny because you can pick a paranormal place, a haunted location across the country, across the world, and more often than not, I've been there, but I don't hunt there a lot because I've forged relationships with the people when I go there. Like, for instance, this weekend I've got a private Lizzie Borden event. Lizzie Borden. Well, yeah, usually I go to Lizzie Borden not to investigate, but to hang out with the owners because, again, I've forged these relationships. And, again, it's about people. Mm-hmm. But Penhurst, I think the coolest thing that happened to me there was paranormal, but not in the way you think. This happened last year at the very hot, the very sweaty Penhurst Paracon 2019. I had caused to lead a group through some of the outside areas, and we happened upon, I think it was either the playground or the pool. No, it was the pool. When I lead groups, I show them some tech, but lately I've been showing them some old school methods. I took out my pendulum and I said, all right, guys, I'm going to show you this method of doing things. It's binary. It's either yes or no questions or A or a B. I can't tell you exactly how it works because honestly, I don't know for sure. There's many theories, but we're going to give this a try. And what I learned, it had happened before. It had happened a few times in Ireland. It happened a few times when I was in Australia a couple of years prior to that. But it really cemented in my mind this time at Penhurst that, all right, as I was asking questions about things that were going on there, I was getting spirit coming through for some of the people that were with me. And I said, hey, and this is a question I ask a lot. I say, all right, do you have a message for anyone here? Started going back and forth. Yes. Oh, okay. Is it a man or woman? Well, is it a man? No. Woman? Yes. And I narrowed it down to the point where we figured out that someone's parent had come through. It was, I think it was their mother, had a message for them. They had died. They were sick. And there was kind of unresolved business, pretty much just the typical, hey, I'm okay. You didn't do anything wrong by me. I'm fine. You don't have to carry this guilt around anymore. And it was a very emotional moment. And while we're looking for evidence, it wasn't the, oh, I died here and I'm haunting the hall. No, it was contact for someone. I was essentially a postman where I was delivering a message saying, hey, this is for you. It wasn't about me. I might've been on the poster, but it was a shared moment that this person felt comfortable enough to say, yeah, I'm going to open up. I'm gonna share this personal detail, this personal loss with you. And it was amazing. It was amazing.
Wow. And at Penhurst Asylum of all places, you're also about to start, which I can only imagine how much work went into this, the History of the Paranormal Mobile Exhibit Tour. And you actually have your first date lined up.
I'm excited. I'm nervous. We're in August right now. This should have been the premiere anyway, should have been in the rear view. This was originally slated to happen back in May, but obviously COVID made the world a little different this year, but
yeah, just a little.
Finally, it's coming through, and I have this exhibit, a mobile exhibit called The History of the Paranormal. And again, much like Paralosophy, I want to challenge people to think differently. But in this case, I want them to know certain facts, certain details about this interest that we all love and share, and that the paranormal existed before 2004. So,
what?
I know you're shocked. I knew this would be news, but yeah, there was, the spiritualist movements, Harry Price, Edward Swedenborg. There was a whole line of people that generally a lot of people don't know their names. And honestly, sometimes I forget it too, and I'll have to go and I'll give myself a refresher. But this exhibit is meant to provide people the foundation. And it's not a haunted museum. It's not a traveling museum of weird things. Like, other people are doing that. I don't need to. They're doing well enough without me. So this is, and I mean, it's, I hate saying that it's educational because that's like boring, but I want to educate people so that as they go through the exhibit, if they leave with one fact in their head, and then they tell that to someone, and then they tell that to their group, and names like the Fox Sisters and
Fox Sisters
and all these other things get out there and are known, we all advance, we all get better. And because I want it to be entertaining as well, I have a lot of interactive things. So there's a Xena card station where you could sit and do your Xena cards parapsychology tests in a couple of wavy lines, you know. And there's going to be a tarot card station, the crowdsourced photo evidence area. I made this mural, it's a piece of artwork using everybody's submitted photograph. Different parts, and literally every day that I've been home from the quarantine and when I'm not at work, I'm making, I'm designing, I'm building, and it's going to premiere.
If you love anything specific like this, you want to know the history of it. So the fact that you're combining the two is brilliant, because I'll be perfectly honest, I don't know nearly as much history as I would like to know. And so this is something that I would be completely on board for. So September 5th, Pennhurst Asylum, September 19th and 20th, Rahway, New Jersey. Obviously, they can go to neverstopsearching.com for all the info, because I've been to the website. It's got everything on there.
As long as people have a good time, I'm happy.
A Pentagon UFO unit will be making investigations as ex-advisors have suggested that, quote, vehicles not made on this earth were placed in U.S. government storage. As we all know, that's been honestly rumored for decades now, going back to the Roswell crash in 1947. But the Unidentified Aerial Phenomenon Task Force, or I like to call them the UAPTF, the team.
Yeah, if you're nasty, call them that. Yeah,
that's right.
Rolls off the tongue.
It sure does. It sure does.
UPS.
They will be updating the Intelligence Committee on research every 6 months. I have a whole bunch more info, but just first thoughts. Chris Villain.
I'm like, listen, this is great. I'm glad this is publicly being announced, but like, we all knew. What I want to be announced is like, hey, we got one. Like, we got a little alien dude. He's going to be doing interviews next week. You're welcome. That's what I want. Because like, this is cool. I'm glad that they're putting, again, like a public, this is real kind of thing. But anybody that's been into paranormal and aliens for any amount of time kind of knows that they already exist. So cool. Thank you, I guess.
Yeah. Can we have him on the show?
Yeah, yes. I'd like to have him on the show. But yeah, I feel the same way, Chris. Like, I feel like it's very similar to the Black Lives Matter movement, where I'm like, we've been done saying it.
Right.
But now it's popular. But, you know, it's like that to me. And so I am glad that they are going to investigate. But I wonder, are they investigating themselves and their fact that they probably knew a little bit about it before?
I have to think, like, this is the stuff that they're comfortable telling us.
I think the funny thing is that this is not front page news at this point, because the world is so fucked right now. And
why? What's going on?
Literally nothing. Nothing.
Oh, okay.
All right. Totally fine. I just think it's really funny that, like, of all the things in the world, everyone's just like, yeah, we know. It's just.
Honestly, that's probably why they released it during. They're like, do it now so that nobody knows. Like, it'll be fine.
Nobody will care if we say it now.
Yeah.
Well, there's a gentleman named Eric Davis who is an astrophysicist who worked as a subcontractor and a consultant. He said he actually briefed the U.S. Department of Defense back in March about the retrieval of, quote, off-world vehicles not made of this earth, which, if you don't know, off-world is a step above off-road. It's like more than a Hummer is what I'm guessing.
Where can I buy one of those? Is like Land Rover into them yet or what?
I'm sure Elon Musk will come up with something in the next couple of years.
Yes.
And he said that he's worked on his unit since 2007. The examination of the materials have basically failed to determine their source and led him to conclude, quote, we couldn't make it ourselves. This is an astrophysicist, which essentially means the cream of the crop in the United States of America that we have to offer. He's saying whatever this stuff is, we couldn't make it, which goes back to the age-old argument
the universe is so massive, it's almost ignorant to say there's no possibility of intelligent life anywhere else. And if you think about it, for how long humanity has existed, we have no idea how long other life forms have existed. They could be light years ahead of us technology-wise, which essentially is what people have been saying since 1947, when supposedly they recovered, you know, the crashes at Roswell, and there were materials that they couldn't explain. Now, if any of that material still exists, we truly don't know, because unfortunately, Mac Brunzel gave it to the government. And if you give anything to the government, you never see it again.
Well, that was going to be my next thing is, you know, when he says that, does he mean we can't do it because it's an intelligence thing, a technology thing, or a material thing? Do they not have the materials that they need to actually make something like this? Mm-hmm. And I kind of get the feeling that's a huge part of it as well, is this could be material that we can't gather and bring in and actually create this off-world, off-road vehicle with. So
yeah. I mean, because basically, we can't be the best planet out there, right? There's got to be people that are farther along than us.
There's literally, like, in my mind, there's, like, zero chance we're the coolest in the universe. Like, right? Take a look around.
We can't be. We just can't be. There's so much space out there, which is why I used to have panic attacks when I was, like, 6 years old about this. You know, like, looking up, we're in nothing, hanging in an infinite thing with no end. That is terrifying and also intriguing.
Mm-hmm. What was that movie with Sandra Bullock?
Gravity or something?
Gravity, yes. Oh, yes.
The space one. Yeah.
When I first saw it, I was like, this is the scariest thing I've ever seen in my life. And then I thought about it and I was like, this isn't the scariest thing I've seen. This is the scariest thing I'm living. We are that. Like, we're doing that now on Earth.
Yeah, I would not see that movie because, again, my mom would literally have to talk me out of panic attacks since I was a little kid about space. So it's just better if I don't see that.
So you're on the thought process of that you would be frightened if aliens or extraterrestrials or other life forms made themselves publicly known, because thus far.
No. Oh, no, that's true. Okay. No, I'd be fine with the aliens. I'm not fine with the infinite possibility of something not ending. I have an anxiety disorder. It's like,
isn't that like a thing where, like, when things are too large, that's like a phobia.
Yeah, it is. It's like the fact that there is no end to something and there's infinite possibilities out there used to make me completely, as a child, flip out. And my mom would be like, it's okay. And you just imagine a 6-year old going, we're hanging in nothing. There's no end. like that is what I didn't.
Oh,
like,
my.
Aliens,
that's how hamsters feel when they're on that little wheel.
Wow. It doesn't end. That's right. Now you made me scared of hamster wheels. Great.
And hamsters.
Not hamsters. It's not their fault. It's the wheel.
That's amazing. You were a deeper thinker at 6 years old than I've been my entire life. That is something.
I mean, literally a few weeks ago, Kwasa was trying to figure out if he had to refrigerate olive oil. So yes, that is true.
Wait, for the record, no.
No, you don't.
I was going to say, because I had never heard of anybody refrigerating olive oil.
Yeah, no.
Well, you know, through the quarantine, I've gotten on a bit of a health kick, did a lot of nutrition research, and I decided that I want to research the best possible extra virgin olive oil from all over the world. And right. I found some really good stuff. And I said, well, okay, now what? What do I do with it once I open it?
Nothing.
So I had to Google it. Yeah, put it in a cabinet, room temperature, ideally, and keep it dark. And that olive oil is going to chill for a little bit.
Well, that's a fair really question, because I didn't know you had to keep soy sauce refrigerated until like a month ago.
What? Fuck.
Exactly. Dude, right? You don't know that. On the bottle, it literally says keep refrigerated. And like nobody's been reading that, dude.
I had this discussion about hot sauce recently.
It's probably refrigerated at the end of the night.
Well, because I thought about it, because I have hot sauce sitting on my desk, as you can see. Mm-hmm. It's just sitting on my desk. I have one in my purse all the time.
And yes, me too. I have three different kinds in my purse.
Hot sauce chips. But I recently, somebody was just like, don't you have to keep that refrigerated? And I was like, excuse me? I've never kept it refrigerated. What are you talking about? And they're like, yeah, you have to refrigerate hot sauce. Turns out it looks like Cholula, you don't. So I'm going to be okay.
It depends on the hot sauce. Yeah, it depends on like the preservative levels and stuff.
Anyways, back to the aliens.
Aliens and soy sauce. You have to put in the refrigerator after you open them, though.
Oh, Without question. Yeah, I think Area 51's got a really low general temperature is my guess. Like, they're keeping it at like 63, I'm thinking.
Keep that alien on ice, you guys. Keep him on ice.
So the biggest push over the last number of years is by a gentleman you may have heard of, Luis Elizondo. He is the former military intelligence official from the Pentagon, spent 10 years with the Pentagon. He was also a part of the History Channel show last year. That was really cool. I watched it. It was also with Tom DeLonge from Blink-182, who many people laughed at when he said, hey, I'm going to dedicate my life to UFOs, but I think it's awesome.
That's rude. Do you, boo?
Yeah, the show is called Unidentified Inside America's UFO Investigation, and he's been very vocal about everything ever since. I don't know what the government thinks about it per se, but you have all these top officials, and even going back to Roswell, anyone who has not read or listened to the book Witness to Roswell, it's the most comprehensive book about Roswell 1947. I mean, you had so many high-ranking officials, including Lieutenant Walter Haut, is by far the most vocal, and he's no longer with us, of course, because he was part of the whole Roswell situation. You have so many people who, whether it's on their deathbed or whether it's later on in life, who finally come clean, it's kind of hard to deny there is something. And the question is it understandable that the government wants to keep it a secret? Because let's be honest, we as human beings on this planet, especially in this country, we don't really prove ourselves to be that responsible.
That's an understatement. It's a massive understatement.
I think about that every time I put away my shopping cart. You've heard of the shopping cart theory?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I think about that every time I put my shopping cart away. And I'm just like,
no.
What's a shopping cart?
Go for it. Take it away.
I mean, Ashley could probably do this a lot more eloquently than I will. But basically, it's like the truest test of like good spirited people and like not good spirited people, because like there is no punishment.
And whether we're capable of being self-governing.
Yes, because it's like the only real kind of thing where there's you're supposed to put the shopping cart back. Yep. Like that's what you're supposed to do. But there is zero punishment for not putting it back. So you really get to like, you know, figure out where people stand.
The idea for the shopping cart theory is like, you know, are we capable of self-government? If you're the kind of person that is willing and able to actually put that shopping cart away, you would be able to be in a self-government. And the people that just like leave it and say, someone's paid to do that, those are the people that would not be able to be a part of a self-governing body.
Don't send them to Mars.
It winds up, and that's the thing. Like,
don't send me to Mars either.
It comes down to whether they are a good or a not good member of society in that sense. And it's really interesting. Like, I'd recommend reading about it because it's such a little thing that technically does not affect you. Me working at a grocery store, I have to put shopping carts away all day, right? So when I clock out, the last thing I want to have to do is put away a shopping cart.
Yeah.
But do I do it? Yes, because that is a part of being a decent human being. I had an ex a long time ago where he used to get really frustrated because I would be like, put the shopping cart in the corral. And he's like, it's like half a block away. I'm like, no, it's not. Just, it's going to take
just
you
do
one,
it.
Minute. Just 1 minute of your life. Go do it. And they started doing it and it became a habit. And for a long time, they were really mad about it because they were just like, this is so annoying. There's somebody paid to do it. I'm like, it doesn't matter. That's not what matters. Like,
yeah,
I feel that way about movie theaters because I used to work in a movie theater and like people are such pigs and we'd have to clean up after that. And it's just like, all you have to do is like literally take your soda cup that you've brought in and your popcorn container and you just do this. Not at your seat. You just go into a trash can. But people do it on their seat.
But these are all good parallels because, you know, when it comes down to it, how would people as a whole react to knowing that aliens not only have been visiting for decades, but are among us, maybe. Let's say that's a possibility. You know, Stephen Hawking actually has a very interesting perspective, or had one, I should say. He basically said, be careful what you wish for. In his mind, and his mind worked a lot better than most of ours, he believed that aliens making a well-known visit wouldn't exactly turn out that well, considering the technology they may have. He compared it to basically Christopher Columbus doing what he did and just massacring the Native Americans. He thinks that that's what would happen. And it kind of goes back to, maybe that's where the movie Independence Day came from. I don't know. As we all know, most movies involving extraterrestrials are not exactly comedies. They're not exactly feel-good movies. Or it could be the fact that they do visit and they're just not interested because we have nothing to offer. That's possible.
Maybe they're just exploring and monitoring. Like, I think there is a motivation to go cross planets and to cause damage. Like, that's a good motivating factor for why you would make a trip. But I think there's also like curiosity and exploring and finding out about another planet. I think we could, that's a good reason too. Maybe they're out here for that. I do think a good portion of the population would, not a good portion, a small population part of the population would freak out, and it would be like doomsday cults and crap.
Yeah, that would be, you know, most racist Americans would probably.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm worried about.
They like, can't handle illegal aliens now. They're not going to handle outworldly illegal aliens.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get worried because like I live in LA and most of my friends are either here or in New York. And so we got like coast vibes where I feel like we're very cultured. We meet a lot of different people. And so like, in my immediate circle, I'm like, nah, we would vibe with these aliens,
right,
or at least see what's good. Like, we're not going to shoot first, but you best believe middle America is going to say lol and like launch a nuke.
Going back to Roswell, and I want to do a whole episode on this at some point, but the way the government covered up things, you know, by saying it was a weather balloon, that was such a quick knee-jerk reaction and a response. Looking back on it, weather balloons at the time were made of neoprene rubber and were no more than 1 pound. And that was their excuse. And that's what they went with. And no one ever, yeah, people questioned them, but they weren't really allowed to really question them. And you look at how we've progressed in 70 years. Like today, it's a fact, like our cell phones technically have more computing power than Apollo 11 had. So you look at how we've progressed in decades. Other life forms who have been around for a lot longer than Earth, perhaps, imagine how far ahead they are. You saw the video that finally went public a number of months ago of the Air Force pilots who couldn't figure out what the hell was on their radar, and it just kept zipping by.
Dude, I think I remember watching a documentary on Roswell, and I don't remember if it was the gentleman that you had spoke about earlier who worked with the government on the materials found, but there was a guy talking about he had handled the material, and he was talking about how it was basically it being like a sheet of metal that you could crumble up like tinfoil, and then it just re-expands and like retakes the initial shape that it was in. And I feel like that is very, very, very far in our future. Like that's nowhere near our near future of creating something that crazy, if that is indeed what was recovered.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed it, tell a couple of friends and please rate and review the show on whatever platform you're listening on, especially if it's iTunes and Apple Podcasts. We appreciate you.